What's cracking, folks? Welcome to Podcast Paroxysm. We're back after a very long break. I'm Jared Dubin, and we've got Jordan White online. What's up, Jordan?
How you doing, Jared?
I'm doing pretty good. Today, we're talking about the really, really bad teams in the NBA. We're going to start off with a team that is going to be pretty bad, probably very, very bad, but we're starting off with the Orlando Magic because Jordan hates Victor Oladipo. And he deserves to be shamed.
Okay. I think this needs a bit of correction. It was never that I hated him. I just wasn't that impressed by him.
That sounds like the same thing to me. It sounds like you said that you hate Victor Oladipo.
Jared, for a lawyer, that you're pretty wrong with your interpretation there. I just wasn't impressed by him. I was so wrong. I was at Orlando Summer League. And holy crap, that kid has poise, he has skills, he's already a terrific defender, both individually and team-wise in the sense of how he communicates with his teammates on the floor. Not necessarily how he covers up their mistakes, but how he points out to them where to go. Just already the leader on that end. And then on offense, you know, they want to play him at point guard this year. He looked shaky running the point, but he didn't look awful. I don't know. I don't think he's a full-time point guard. I think maybe they try that experiment this year, and then maybe if they land, like, Smart or preferably Exum next year's draft, they'll move him back to the two. But he was still very poised on that end. He still looked comfortable. His shot looked so much better than, you know, people thought that was going to be his weakness, but he looked fine. And just, again, comfort and poise were the two most outstanding things I saw from him. I'm really excited for him now, so I apologize.
And I think that your apology is completely necessary, but I also don't think it's good enough because you said one time that you hated him.
And never said I hated him.
It's just too much. I think that you can't overcome your initial diagnosis of hatred towards Victor Oladipo. But I think you're right, obviously, about the defense. That was the draw about him as a draft pick, was that you're going to get that defense no matter what. So the downside with a pick of Oladipo is higher than the downside of a guy who, you know, doesn't play ridiculous defense right off the bat. But and I also like the point guard experiment they're going to run this year. I think Henry Abbott wrote about it at ESPN. It's like sneaky tanking. Like, this is a guy who has no experience at point guard whatsoever. If it works, great, fantastic. You just developed a guy who can now play point guard and shooting guard. And if it doesn't, then fantastic. You're terrible this year again. And you get a top, you know, five pick in one of the better drafts in recent memory. It makes perfect sense to me.
I think one thing that this also does is, you know, Rob Hennigan, the GM of the Magic, he loves to talk about the process. It's one of his favorite buzzwords. And this is all part of the process, too, for Oladipo. Let's say he's not a success. Arousing success at point guard, but that still gives him a year under his belt of learning the position and being able to play the position. So even if they pick up a guy like Exum in next year's draft, they've still got Oladipo to go to as a backup or to go to in different lineups, and they'll know that it won't be a disaster if they have him handling the ball.
Right. I mean, it's never a bad thing for a guard to work on his ball handling and passing skills. Those are things he's always going to need. And you'd rather him work on that early on now. So, you know, a lot of people have made the Tony Allen comparison for Oladipo. Like, Tony Allen with more athleticism and a slightly more polished offensive game. Well, if you could have made Tony Allen into a guy that could actually dribble when he started his career, he'd be a lot more useful of a player now. So why not do that with Oladipo right now that he's young and when it's likely they're going to be bad anyway? So it could help him out in his development, even if he struggles with it this year.
Yeah, exactly.
Other guys on Orlando I like. Vucevic. First of all, I love Eddie Rivera for coming up with that nickname. It's fantastic.
The Magic just in general. Like, yeah, they're going to be bad this year, but they're also going to be kind of fun to
watch. They have fun guys. Like, the two of those guys, Tobias Harris, Mo Harkless. They're going to be a fun, bad team, at least.
Exactly. And, like, Andrew Nicholson's post moves are just, like, a thing of beauty. Mo Harkless looked a lot better handling the ball this summer. their second round pick this year, Romero Osby, I think is also going to give them good minutes. But yeah, like they're.
And then Matt's favorite player, Kyle O'Quinn.
Oh God, we might get fired.
I might get fired from being the co-editor in chief for that one right there. I mean, it's good that they have all these guys though, because somebody needs to balance out Jahmyr Nelson.
Yeah.
Right. Jahmyr might be the most boring player in the league right now. Would you agree on that?
Most boring. I don't know about boring. I think it's just the most inconsequential player. You're just kind of.
We might need to make a list the next podcast we do. Of the most boring players in the league, Jahmyr Nelson's definitely going to be on my list.
Okay, fair enough.
But they also have Aaron Aflalo, who is not boring and has a Kendrick Lamar song about him.
Right. And I think Aflalo, I don't think he's in the future plans for Orlando.
I wouldn't be surprised to see either one of those guys moved.
No, he's terrific trade bait, though. He's in that J.J. Redick position of... A lot of teams need his specialties, which are defense and threes. And, you know, you saw how well he did in that one of those first years with the Nuggets, in which he wasn't asked to carry a lot of the load offensively. But then, you know, in that second year, or in that other, his last year with the Nuggets, you saw, like, it was kind of a detriment when he was asked to do more.
Yeah, and especially last year in Orlando when he was asked to do more,
exactly,
his efficiency went down. He's a guy that kind of needs to be limited to a 3-and-D guy. Like last year, he only shot 30% from three, and that's for a 38% shooter for his career.
Right.
You know, that's not a guy that's being used correctly.
Exactly.
You stick him on a team where he's the fourth or fifth option when he's on the court, and he's a 3-and-D guy, he's going to be much better.
Exactly.
Like he hadn't shot – let's see. In his – he barely played – in his first season with Detroit, and then the next year in his second year in Detroit, he shot 40.2% from three. Then his first year in Denver, he shot 43.4%. Second year in Denver, 42.3%. And then his last year in Denver, 39.8%. And then all of a sudden last year, he's shooting 30% on threes because he's just taking too many shots, forced shots, and he had too much responsibility on offense is what it was.
Yeah, it's just a case of being asked to do too much. He's never going to be the guy. He shouldn't be the guy. But you give him, like you said, like that third perfect, like stellar role player.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
What do you think? We got more to talk about with Orlando?
The only quick thing I want to touch on is just how much I like what Jacques Bond did in his first year. He was a pretty big question mark, having only a few years of assistant coaching underneath his belt. But he comes in, and you know he instills kind of that good defense. Even though they were bad on defense, they still tried on defense, and they were pretty. Like you could see them learning defense last year. And I like the way he commands his players. I like the way he works with them. I think he's going to be. He's already a very good young coach. I just think he's going to be much better in a few years.
I like how he makes me feel old because I watched like his entire career. And now he's one of the youngest coaches in the league. But I also want to touch on real quick because I destroyed Orlando last year when they made that Dwight Howard trade. I was like, you didn't get anything you're supposed to get when you trade a superstar.
I guess you didn't destroy Orlando last year and actually said, hey, let's give this time.
Yeah, that was you. I remember. But let's also – I mean, they certainly weren't the short-term winner. You know, Denver was last year with them winning, you know, 56, 57 games, whatever it was. And getting third in the West, but then, you know, Gallo got hurt and they kind of fell apart in the first round of the postseason. But, I mean, I think it's unquestionable that, you know, Orlando and I guess maybe Philly would be the long-term winners because they just kind of – Philly just blew everything up when they let Bynum go. But that's not really connected to this to that trade.
No, it's not.
Right. That's connected to them then – you know, moving on from Jrue Holiday and starting a total rebuild. And we don't even know if they're the long-term winners yet. But Orlando already looks like they're getting back going in the right direction. They got a starting center. They got they sucked enough to get the second pick in the draft. They turned then being able to trade Redick and Tobias Harris they've got some good pieces there now, and I mean, I think they're moving slowly, but slowly in the right direction.
They've also got great cap flexibility heading forward too, which is another thing that deal gave them.
Not that, you know, many guys want to come sign in Orlando, but we'll see what happens.
No, but it'll be kind of like that Indianapolis thing where they get kind of, not necessarily the leftovers, but like the second tier, still very good role players like David West or something like that.
David West is great. You know, if they could get a David West type in a couple years when they're ready to start, you know, actually winning, that would be great.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to another terrible Eastern Conference team that we just mentioned quickly, the Sixers, with the Hank as the general manager. I mean, I don't know if people know about this new nickname for Sam Hinkie. We're testing it out, the Hank.
I think it's a good one. I think it's going to stick.
It's that or Hinkery Dinkery Doc. The Sixers are on the clock.
I think both are going to work. I think both are going to stick, and I really think we should be giving more credit for that.
I think that it should be widespread. Everybody should be using that, especially the Hinkery Dinkery Doc, the Sixers are on the clock, because that team is going to be so bad, and it's exceedingly likely that they're going to be on the clock for the number one pick pretty soon.
Yes, yes. I think one of the projections was for them to win, I think, 22 games.
22 ain't bad. That's more than Charlotte, Orlando won last year.
Right, right. And so that's why I think that's extremely optimistic. You know, I love the hiring of Brett Brown. I think he brings that great blend of player development experience and coaching experience at very high levels. We all know I'm a big fan of the Hank. And then, you know, they've got Michael Carter-Williams, who I'm on. But
that might be a good thing on him, because they want to be bad.
Oh, no, it's great. And they're going to give him the reins right away. So it's kind of like that Oladipo thing. He's going to learn, even though he's already a point guard, but it's like, if it's a success this season, great. If it's not, great. They both win.
What I'm excited for Carter Williams wise, and I was not a big fan of Carter Williams coming into the draft, but what I'm excited for is for him and Evan Turner to form the worst shooting backcourt in the history of the NBA. I mean, it's just going to be bricktastic. It's going to be unbelievable. I'm excited. You're excited. The Hank is excited. And, I mean, the whole city of Philadelphia should be excited.
God, it's going to be really bad, isn't it?
Oh, my God. They might miss, like, 1,000 shots combined.
It's going to be really terrible.
I don't even know if that's a lot, but it sounded like a lot.
Carter Williams did not look good in Orlando.
Not that matters much, but
no, it doesn't.
It's not encouraging.
Right. That's exactly right. I mean, I think he shot sub 26% overall.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's pretty horrible.
I think we call that Turner-esque.
Yes, exactly. So I don't think you're off with your calculations of how many shots they're going to miss combined. Yeah, they're just going to be really bad.
Yeah, and I mean, some of the guys on this team, it's like they're not even guys that I've heard of. Like, who is Tim Olbrecht?
He's from Germany. He was with the Rockets last season. And then they just, you know, picked him up.
You know, they swung a trade for Tony Roten, which, again, they're stockpiling guards that can't shoot. So, I mean, he fits in with that. Jason Richardson might be out for the season. That came out a few days ago.
Oh, I didn't see that.
So, again, they're going to be, you know,
without a shooter.
Yes.
Another position.
And then, you know, Nerlens might miss part of the season. They got right. Royce White, who can, like, only play games in the tri-state area or something.
If he plays at all.
Right. If he gets on the court at all. You never know what might happen with Royce White. And then they've got San Antonio Spurs cast off James Anderson. And if the Spurs can't turn a guy into a role player, he's probably not actually a good player.
Right. James Anderson was the guy. The Spurs drafted him, and I think it was like a year after his rookie year, he said that, you know, he wanted to be traded away because he wanted more playing time. And that's like, dude, you get the opportunity to learn from Greg Popovich and from Manu Ginobili. Why in the hell would you want to leave?
Well, James Anderson must think he's a superstar.
I guess.
He did go to Oklahoma State.
he did go to Oklahoma State. It was 1 year there, or no, 2 years.
Who was on that Oklahoma State team with James Anderson?
I think Jamison Curry was.
I thought Jamison Curry was before that.
No, I think they overlapped by 1 or 2 years.
Somebody mentioned Jamison Curry on Twitter last night because of the Florida State quarterback named like Jamie's something. So he was like names that are better than each other. And then I remembered that Jamison Curry had originally committed to North Carolina. And I just think about how much better his career would have been if he had stayed there rather than going to Oklahoma State.
I don't know how much better it would have been. Roy Williams doesn't develop talent that well.
No?
No, I really don't think he does.
I mean, look at all the NBA guys that have come through Roy Williams' program.
Yeah, I know, I'm joking. I think...
You gotta convey your sarcasm better.
Well, you just read it better, Jared. Damn it.
I got to work on my sarcasm meter, I guess. But let's talk about Nerlens real quickly, because it's pretty unbelievable. This guy was like the presumed number one pick for a long time, and then just drops to six, and Philly swings that trade. I mean, this is a guy that's still supposed to be an impact defensive player at least, right? Like, it's a good pick. Wow, my voice just went up like three octaves when I said that. That was scary.
He's definitely going to have an impact on defense. I mean, it was kind of like Oladipo in a way. Like, maybe he's never going to be the offensive player that Oladipo could be, but you're going to get defense from him. Like, that's without question. And his basement is a terrific shot blocker and maybe like a Larry Sanders light, but his ceiling. Is maybe Sanders-esque.
I think the ceiling would be like Tyson Chandler.
Right.
You know, that's kind of the model for those guys right now in terms of, you know, the tall, skinny, shot-blocking, athletic types.
Right.
And with not much offensive game.
And teams do have a reason, I guess, to be scared. I mean, you know, ACL surgery or injury tear is a major injury, but it's not as bad as it used to be. You know, you look at players like Ricky Rubio and other players who have come back from ACL surgeries. Like, yeah, it takes time to rehab from, but the Sixers definitely aren't concerned about rehab time. So I think it was a ballsy move, obviously, trading away your best player for a guy who is still an unproven player despite his promise and, like, despite the fact that you know what you're going to get from him. But it was a good move.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think that I kind of made that clear. But also, anytime you can get a guy on your team with a flat top, you got to make that move. It just has to happen. Especially if you want to rival the Knicks for best hair in the division.
Yeah, right.
Because, I mean, nobody's competing with Shump right now.
He could get there, though. And I don't know if you saw Noel's like suits, both for his press conference and for the draft and whatnot.
He's a dapper young man. You know, he looks pretty good.
Yes.
Let's move on to Thaddeus Young, the guy who has inspired 1,000 HP thread names. He's got to wind up somewhere. That
the boy who cried fat. The boy, as Noam said.
You say Steve is.
No, it's going to be the boy who cried that once Thad Young does actually get traded, and Gnome's not going to believe anything.
I mean, he's got to wind up somewhere where he could be put to good use, right? Like, we need to try to find a place that can use Thad Young, because he doesn't belong on this terrible team. He deserves better.
Yes, I agree. I don't know where you could put him. Let's look at teams real quick.
Well, I mean, Houston would actually be a pretty good fit because they kind of need a four.
They do need a stretch four, but they do need a guy who can shoot. I mean, they'd be good. I'd like him there.
Even the Lakers would be a nice fit.
What about Memphis?
Well, if they decide to move on from Z-Bo.
That's what I'm saying. You give him a guy who's a bit more athletic, who can maybe move around the court a little bit more. Yeah, you get great use out of Gasol's passing ability, finding him on cuts and whatnot.
Or you know what? You know what the fit is? I found it. It's San Antonio when Duncan retires.
Oh, man.
Plays the four between Splitter and Kawhi. That's the fit, right? I feel like that makes perfect sense.
I like that too. I Yeah, I like that.
Well, are we just going to give them Thad Young? Like, yes, come on.
We're just going to give them Thad Young.
Well, I think we should be able to do that. Just like when a guy is on a really bad team, we should just be able to put him on the team that fits perfectly.
Exactly. What about the Pacers? I mean, I know they have David West. But, you know, West is getting up there in age. It may not completely match in terms of, like, when he gets his opportunity to start full-time and when West starts to decline. But that's another team I think he'd be good on.
Yeah, I mean, I think he would be good there. But they also just signed two backup forwards. They traded for Scola and signed Copeland. Not that Thad Young is a better player than both of those guys, but that gives them a very, very crowded front court rotation, and they wouldn't be able to find minutes for guys that they, you know, have invested their bench in.
What about the Bulls?
The Bulls would make some sense, you know. Boozer is still there, obviously. Taj Gibson's still there, and
that's,
Noah.
I think that's the only issue is, you know, whether you decide to move forward with Gibson or – because, I mean, I think –
Well, if they amnesty Boozer after the season, then I would think that either way it becomes a pretty good fit.
Yeah.
The Bulls also drafted Eric Murphy, a good shooter.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I think that was a good pick.
All right, let's move on from Philly to another team in the Atlantic Division that should be pretty bad. My favorite team, the Boston Celtics. Lord Paul Pierce is gone from that team, man. Good Lord, I cannot stand that guy. But of course he's on the Nets. Oh, God, just kill me.
A few things about the Celtics. They made they obviously blew it up, and they traded away Garnett and Pierce and the immortal Jason Terry. And so now their starting lineup looks like this. Rondo at shooting guard, you're probably either going to start Bradley or Courtney Lee. Brandon Bass or Solinger, Humphreys, and Jeff Green. Kelly Olynyk's definitely going to get time too.
The immortal Gerald Wallace.
Yes, Gerald Wallace is there too.
Marshawn Brooks, Jordan Crawford.
God, it's just a bad team.
Yeah, I mean, although, you know, Rondo could carry them to like 30 wins depending when he comes back.
Exactly.
And they might not be as bad as I would think that they want to be.
And they made one of the – like, they and the Sixers made the two stealthiest moves in the entire offseason. Obviously, no one expected the Sixers to make that Nerlens Noel trade. And then the Celtics, out of nowhere, hired Brad Stevens as their head coach.
And that was, you know, every internet nerd, which includes us, yeah, loves it. We just love it. It's just a great hire.
Yeah, it's terrific. And I think –
this is the situation you want to be in if you're going to hire a college coach like that, especially a young college coach who's heavy into, you know, the analytics and stuff. I mean, which he is, but it's a situation where people think, oh, that guy's into analytics, so that's all he does. But that's not what anyone is like, you know.
No, like you take
most analytics heavy guys watch more film than anybody else.
Exactly. And then you also look at what he did at Butler, like taking them to championship games, like getting the most out of that talent. It's phenomenal. Think of what he's going to be able to do with NBA talent. He's got a great front office that's going to support him, and it's going to get him the talent that he needs to succeed.
And they have so many draft picks over the next 5-6 years or so.
So many.
I think somebody, you know, tweeted it out a few weeks ago, like somewhere around, I guess it was a couple months ago, somewhere around the draft, where they have, you know, 10 or 12 picks over the next 4 or 5 years in the first round.
And you know they're going to, like, probably package some of those to move up. Or
yeah, they'll wheel and deal a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Danny Ainge is a wheeler-dealer type.
He is, and, you know, he's got that good support from
Kevin McHale.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I guess we can get prepared for the Celtics to trade for James Harden in a couple of years.
James Harden, or you know, he's also got Larry Bird in Indianapolis, so maybe he'll just get Paul George.
Yeah, but Larry Bird didn't, you know, gift him Kevin Garnett.
Right. So now I'm saying it's his turn.
Oh yeah, well yeah. Maybe it is Larry Bird's turn. That's a good call. In a couple of years, when you know David West retires and George Hill, something happens, Roy Hibbert leaves the NBA to take a full time role on Parks and Rec. Then
Paul George.
Yeah, they're going to be looking to move Paul George to Boston.
Exactly. Be excited, Celtics fans.
Chris Humphreys is going to like factor pretty heavily into this team's plans this year, which is kind of hilarious.
Oh, it's really hilarious.
I've never seen a guy get more vitriol in arenas for like his off-court life than Chris Humphreys. Just because the dude was married to Kim Kardashian, everybody hates that dude in arenas. It's hilarious.
Detest him. Yeah, it makes no sense. Like, he's not, I don't want to say, like, not boastful, but, like...
He's harmless. Like, he's just a guy that's, like, a hardworking rebounder.
Exactly.
It's funny that, like, that's the object of ire in basketball arenas. That's usually the guy that everybody loves, and everyone just hates this dude.
Yeah, no, it's awful. But also kind of funny.
Yeah, it's definitely funny. Speaking of funny, Kelly Olynyk's hair.
Not as funny as Kelly Olynyk's T-Rex arms.
He has T-Rex arms. I did not know this.
Oh, yeah.
This is one of... That should be on draft scouting reports.
Has T-Rex arms?
Yeah. I mean, I would like to know what kind of arms a dude has.
Yeah. They're not very... He doesn't have a great wingspan. That being said, he did look good in Orlando. I know, again, the summer league caveat.
Especially Orlando summer league, where there aren't as many teams.
Right, exactly. But he did, I mean, again, like, he was still able to get a shot off. And he's got great confidence in that shot. He had really good range. He was competitive on the boards. Obviously, this is... I'm not saying he's going to score. I think he scored, like, 20 points per game at summer league and had a ridiculous PER and true shooting percentage, all that. No, that's not going to happen this year. But I don't think it's going to be the horror. I don't think he's going to be as bad as some people think he's going to be. I think he'll be a decent contributor. And I think Brad Stevens is a really good coach for him. And so far as he's going to find different ways to take advantage of his offensive talents and use him in some schemes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, Boston will be fine with him taking as many shots as he wants this year. They're, right. Again, I mean, and Rondo is going to find the guys that have shot-making talent, you would think.
Yes.
I mean, even though their offense has been pretty bad these last few years, even with Rondo at the helm, but it's been, you know, it's been kind of, you know, league average with Rondo and worse in the league without Rondo. So you'd think that he could, you know, prop the up whoever's on the court with him to having a halfway to respectable offense. And I mean, there's really just not many other guys on this team that
who are offensively gifted,
right? You know, there's Jeff Green, and then, you know, Marshawn Brooks might have some offensive gifts still. I mean, he was a great scorer he was a prolific scorer at Providence. I wouldn't necessarily say he was a great scorer, because that implies, you know, both
efficiency as, you know, taking good shots, which,
right,
not really,
but, you know, the two of them, maybe Courtney Lee can still make some threes, and then Brandon Bass has a bit of a mid-range game. But then you're looking at, like, Jordan Crawford is their next best offensive player, maybe. So, yeah, I would think that Olynyk's going to get a chance to take some shots.
Yeah.
But one thing I also like about Stevens is his Butler teams were just so good on defense.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
And I feel like if you can coach defense, you can coach defense. He might not necessarily be playing the same defense with the Celtics that he played at Butler, but I would feel like he'll be able to figure something out where they can, you know, competently play defense.
Yes, I think they'll be able to scheme well.
Right. They won't be shutting teams down at a top five level like when they had Kevin Garnett, because they don't have Kevin Garnett.
Exactly.
But, I mean, they still have Bradley, who can pressure ball handlers up and down the court, and that's a very underrated skill. Like, Bradley's become so underrated that he's overrated, one of those guys. Mm-hmm. But that skill still is specifically underrated.
Yes. And Jeff Green's not a terrible defender either. So you've got kind of two pretty – not pretty good, like two above average, two very good defensive wings, which always helps.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily go with above average for Jeff Green, but I do like how not a terrible – and then X like skill would be how you could describe Jeff Green at everything.
Yes. Okay, that's fair enough.
Jeff Green, not a terrible defender. Jeff Green, not a terrible scorer. Jeff Green, not a terrible shooter. It just fits. Yeah. It works. Jeff Green is not a terrible player.
I'm okay with that.
I think that that's a thing now. It's going to – just like the Hink, Jeff Green is not terrible is going to be a thing from now on. Well, we got one more team that should be pretty bad in the East, although maybe not quite as bad as the last few years, considering they were the worst team ever, not this year, but the year before. Michael Jordan's Charlotte Bobcats. Sorry, they will be the Charlotte Hornets soon.
Yep.
Which is, it fits. You know, that it's good that they should be the Hornets again.
They should be the Hornets. They should not be named after the previous team owner.
Right. Yeah, that was always ridiculous.
It was terrible. Yeah, I don't think you're going to see a lot of, like, necessary progression from the Bobcats. They're certainly not going to be as horrible as they used to be.
Just by getting Al Jefferson, I feel like they automatically have to get better. But his defense is so bad that they won't get better enough to make, right, like, a huge difference.
No, they'll score more, probably. But
certainly more efficiently. Like, they were so inefficient last year. And just soaking up like 25% of their possessions probably to Jefferson is going to make them a much better offensive team.
Yes. But they're, again, they got kind of that weird hodgepodge roster where the personnel, I don't know, really doesn't really fit. You've got Kemba Walker, who did improve last season, but he's, you know, he's fast. He's really fast. It's one of his greatest attributes is his speed. They picked Zeller this year, who's also a very good athlete, surprisingly. You've got Michael Gilchrist, again, fast, another athlete, going to be really good on defense. His shot's still very much broken on offense. But then you've got the plodding Jefferson.
Yep.
And so even though I think he was a good kid and it shows that they're serious about sending money, it just doesn't fit.
Yeah, I mean, other than the fact that it makes them, you know, not automatically the worst team in the league, the Jefferson signing makes no sense within the context of their team. Like, their last three draft picks, and I think I've talked about this maybe with you before on GChat or something, but their last three draft picks have been the archetype of hardworking athlete, you know, with Kemba and then Kid Gilchrist and Cody Zeller. That's kind of the way, the direction they've went. And then they come and sign a guy who, you know, he gets over half court with, you know, 15, 16 seconds left in the shot clock. And then he takes another 4 or 5 seconds to jog down to the block. And then he just sticks his hand in there and waits for a pass. And that doesn't necessarily fit with the guys that they've drafted the last few years.
Exactly. So that's just kind of an odd signing. And it's really because, I mean, they have a very good GM. Rich Cho is very good. He's very smart. But you got to wonder how much of the decision-making is in his hands.
Yeah, I mean, any part of the decision-making that's in Michael Jordan's hands is probably too much.
Yes.
Considering his track record.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I like the Cody Zeller pick a lot more than other people did, I think.
I thought it was a fine pick. I may have preferred Macklemore.
Well, the Bobcats draft party, they started booing the pick at the Bobcats draft party.
That
just shows you what the charlatans. What would you call people from Charlotte?
The charlatans.
What would you call people from Charlotte? I mean, I think charlatans works.
I like it. I think it's good.
And they also re-signed Gerald Henderson, which, you know, solid signing. Gerald Henderson is solid.
Yes.
If Jeff Green is not terrible, Gerald Henderson is solid.
I think he's going to be an Aaron Aflalo type guy in a few years in the league, where, like, give it 3, 4, 5 years, he's going to be that guy who's in a position to get traded to a contender that really needs a 3-and-D guy.
Well, I mean, I would say somewhat, but, I mean, the guy's not a good shooter. Like, I think he shoots, like, 26-27% from three for his career. With it, yeah. 27.2% from three for his career, with a career high of 33% last year. So it's not like he's some great, you know, knockdown 3-and-D guy. But yes, I agree. He's an underrated player who should be a good role player on a good team rather than a miscast, you know, second or third option on a really bad team.
Right.
But, you know, they kind of whiffed, it looks like, on the Bismack Biyombo pick. Yeah. He hasn't really turned into much so far. Like, the guy still can't catch.
No, he has horrible hands. I mean, he still makes some of those just, like, ridiculous blocks. But it gets to a point where if that's the only thing he gives you, you know, that's obviously just not very good. He's still incredibly raw given how much basketball he's actually played in his life. But it's like you said, like they just haven't given him much, and he doesn't seem to really fulfill that promise that he made everybody just like slobber when they saw him.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens when you draft the guy ninth overall or whatever it was based on like one tournament.
Yep, exactly.
But the Bobcats do have one of my favorite guys in the league, Anthony Tolliver, now. Very excited.
Anthony Tolliver guy?
I'm a big Anthony Tolliver guy. Not just because of this, but also because of this. During the lockout, he, you know, he took the time like a few days in a row to like actually discuss real lockout related issues on Twitter with a bunch of people, me and Matt included, in for a while. And I just thought that was really cool. Not a lot of guys were involved that much in the actual discussions, and he definitely was, and I'm very happy that he's been elected to serve on the NBPA executive committee.
I like that. I think that's a good pick. Yeah. And I remember it was he, and wasn't it also Nazir Muhammad, who also made quite a few points during the lockout as
well? Yep, Nazir Muhammad was involved as well. But Tolliver was specifically interacting for a few hours with, you know, fans and writers on Twitter, and I thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Do they still have Ben Gordon in Charlotte? Because that's, you know,
I thought he was done. He might have exercised. Let's check. I think he has either 1 year left.
But that trade netted them a draft pick from Detroit, which is the thing that that caused Detroit to kind of go all in this year. Because if that pick falls outside the top eight, Charlotte gets it.
Yeah. He might not be on
it. I think he's still there. And I think they still have, like, Brendan Haywood, too, maybe.
Did you say, how do they still have all these, like, outcast players? Not...
Brendan Haywood was the I think he was the center for like the Vince Carter, Anton Jameson UNC teams, right?
Yes.
It was like him and Eric Montross, maybe?
Oof. Man, I don't even remember that.
Let's take a look at that roster. Was it like 96, 97? Jameson, Carter. No Brendan Haywood on that team.
Yes, Gordon is still with Charlotte. You know, he was the guy. He was the humble yourself guy. Remember that last year with Mike Dunlap?
Dunlap. Oh, was he?
Yeah, it was during a practice, and Dunlap asked him to stop dribbling because, you know, he was trying to talk to the team, and Gordon just out of nowhere says, "You need to humble yourself."
Oof. Ben Gordon, what a guy.
Right. Great chemistry, that guy.
Yeah, I mean, that guy's done a lot in his career to be telling people off.
To humble himself, yeah.
All right, let's move on to the terrible Western Conference teams.
Not as many horrible Western Conference teams.
We'll start with Phoenix. Start with the Suns because they're going to be really bad.
They're going to be horrible.
They've got a new general manager from the Celtics, Ryan McDonough. They got a new coach from Utah, Jeff Hornacek. People are encouraged by the direction they're moving. You know, they've moved on from a lot, or not necessarily a lot of their guys, but, you know, they traded Jared Dudley and they got Eric Bledsoe in there. I don't know if necessarily if people are enthused so much about the Alex Len pick, but he was considered, you know, either the best or second best big man prospect in the draft, and they snagged him at the fifth pick.
I know Andrew hated that pick.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big Len guy.
Neither am I. We discussed that in our pre-draft
thing
with Jack. None of us were very enthused about Alex Len. But I mean, they're getting picks. They're getting young guys. I mean, I don't know necessarily that Bledsoe and Dragic are a great fit together.
Which, I don't think they are. That's another guy. I want Goran Dragic to go to a good team. That's all I want. I mean, he's a fun player to watch, and he deserves to go to a good team.
I mean, they also have, like, Gerald Green and Mike Beasley, although Beasley might get cut, and yeah. Miles Plumlee and Shannon Brown. Now they have Ish Smith, one of my guys. I love Ish Smith.
They're going to be tank-tacking.
But they have so many point guards now between, you know, Bledsoe and Dragic and Marshall and Ish Smith, and they traded, I think they got Malcolm Lee as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they have a million power forwards, too, and they also both Morris's. Plumlee, Channing Frye, Beasley.
We don't know if Frye's going to play.
Is he definitely not back, or is he maybe back?
I think I saw something a few days ago where they should know in a few days whether.
All right, that's good. I mean, I'm happy for Channing Frye if he's able to come back.
Yes.
One of the worst Knick draft picks of the last, you know, whatever years. But I did like how when Larry Brown was the coach, he called him Channin' with no G at the end. So, I mean, that was always encouraging. But
yeah, sure.
The Suns do have a guy that looks like a player, at least, Archie Goodwin.
Yeah. It all depends on whether or not he learns to kind of play. Like, he's not going to get as many shots in the NBA as he did in Summer League.
I mean, why not, though? This team is terrible. He should take a bunch of shots.
You know what? That's true. That's true.
Who's going to take shots? Gerald Green?
Goran Dragic. Although, again, that pairing is going to be, I don't think it's going to work out.
Other than Dragic and Gortat, I mean, it's not like Bledsoe is some great offensive player, great shooter that he should be taking all these shots.
Yeah, and I think Goodwin, like you said, like at the very least, he's a developmental talent who looks to at least have some promise, at least on the offensive end.
Yeah, I mean, they've got some young guys that could turn into something, but probably won't, like the Morris twins.
Yes.
And, you know, Miles Plumlee. And
do you think Gortat or Dragic or both get moved?
I think Gortat's more likely than Dragic. They just signed Dragic last year. And, I mean, they're still talking like they like him and Bledsoe playing together. Like, McDonough has said that, I think. And Hornacek has said that.
Yes.
I think he said that he did an interview with Zach Lowe at Grantland. And I think he talked about a little bit, the two of them playing together. I think Gortat is probably more likely to get moved, and I think also more likely to fetch a better return.
That's true. Yeah. I could see both of them being moved, but I think Gortat, like you said, is going to get you more, and I think he's also maybe going to be in more demand.
Yeah. So which guy on this team do we think is Mike Beasley's pot supplier?
Wow.
Because, I mean, Mike Beasley is too dumb to be growing it himself. He would never be able to do that. Yeah. So where is he getting it from? Why does he keep smoking it in his car? Like, what is wrong with this guy? It's so easy to not get caught smoking weed. Just don't do it in your car. Do it in your house.
Or get a card. I mean, you can get a medical card. Just do that. There's a simple way to fix this problem, Mike Beasley.
Mike Beasley's not intelligent either on or off the basketball court, I think, is what we're coming down on here.
My favorite Beasley quote, this is when he was at K-State, and there was speculation, you know, whether he was going to leave after his freshman year, which of course he was going to. And he was like, no, you know what? Like, I like college. You know, I'm in geology right now. I'm learning about all these rocks, and I didn't know there were these many rocks on Earth.
You know what I've always found interesting about Beasley? He was such a good rebounder at Kansas State.
Incredible.
And that's usually one of the things that translates very well.
Right.
And he just has not been a very good rebounder in the NBA.
No, I remember he was a prolific rebounder, just an incredible rebounder.
Yeah, I just looked it up. He averaged 12.4 rebounds a game in college. Yeah.
Right.
And, I mean, he's actually, I guess, 7 rebounds per 36 minutes in the pros. That's pretty good. But, I mean, he's just –
it's not like those rebounds have made an impact.
Right. And he's also, I mean, his problem is the offensive end mostly, where his field goal percentage has gone down every year he's been in the league.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily a good thing that you would like to have happen.
No,
he had negative 0.047 win shares per 48 minutes last year.
That seems bad.
I'm going to say that that's probably not a thing that you want to have happen.
No, I don't think so.
Think about this. Michael Beasley is probably one of the worst defensive players in the league. He had one defensive win share last year. His offense was so bad that he wound up with negative 1.5 win shares for the season. That's how bad his offense was.
So he's not giving you anything at either end?
Nope.
Nope.
His turnover percentage has gone up every season. His PER has gone down every season. Not a guy that's moving in the right direction.
But you know there are going to be people, you're going to see it on Twitter and whatnot, who are saying he just hasn't had the chance. He hasn't been put in the right situation. He's never been developed properly, this and that. It's like, no, he's bad.
Well, yes, I think it might – I mean, I don't think those two are mutually exclusive.
No, I don't think – well, but it's also wrong.
Well, he's bad. He is bad.
He's had plenty of opportunity though too.
I mean, yeah.
And he's never done anything with it. All he does is score incredibly inefficiently. It's like, yes, he has incredible talent, but he's also a very bad player.
And it's crazy because in that first season, he was like good, man.
Yeah.
He played 25 minutes a game, shot 47% from the field, 41% from three, put up 20-8 per 36 minutes. And he still played bad defense. But this was a guy that looked like, okay, there was a reason he was the number two pick in the draft. And then it's just all downhill from there.
Yeah. Can you imagine if Derrick Rose hadn't had that, meteoric rise?
Right. If he didn't have that amazing tournament, we'd be talking about Michael Beasley on the Bulls right now.
Yeah.
The whole league changes.
Absolutely. That's a timeline we probably don't want to go down because it probably wouldn't be a very fun timeline.
Well, I mean, Wade and Rose would have been on the same team.
But we don't know if Rose goes that high. Because remember, Pat Riley really liked – was that the same – no, that was – sorry. I was getting confused. I thought that was the same draft as O.J. Mayo. No, wait. It was, wasn't it?
What was that, the 2008 draft?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the O.J. Mayo draft. He went third. And then Westbrook, Riley, Kevin Love, Gallo, Eric Gordon.
Right. Riley really liked O.J. Mayo, and there were kind of reports that he was close to taking him second overall. So you maybe would have had Mayo.
You know what? You know what would have happened? Beasley would have wound up on the Knicks somehow.
Just somehow?
Yep. The Bulls would have taken, Kevin Love. Maybe.
Man, that would have been – that would have been fun.
Not for me. We would have wound up with Beasley. we got a little bit off track.
Yeah, we got to move.
Let's move on to another terrible or presumably terrible Western Conference team. The Utah Jazz.
Yeah, they're in a different position from Phoenix. They've got pretty good young talent at most positions. I mean, they've got Burke, who did struggle, but I still think he's going to be solid. They've got Burks at the two. They've got Gordon Hayward. Then they've also got Cantor and Favors. All those guys have, at one point or another, looked, at least pretty good. Favors had kind of a coming out party last year, as did Cantor, because he completely transformed his body. He looked much better last year. So they're in a good position.
The thing with them is that they've kind of got a mismatched roster now because of the move they made where they just took on all the salary in exchange for future first-round picks from Golden State. They took on like $24 million in salary for two future firsts that are likely to fall pretty late in the first round for Richard Jefferson and Andrew Spiedrins. And they also drafted that huge guy, Rudy Gobert, whatever it is.
Yeah. He doesn't know how to play basketball.
I know absolutely zero about him.
I watched him at in Orlando. Some people were really excited about him, and I didn't know why. I mean, you look at him and, like, yeah, he's got a ridiculous wingspan, ridiculous height, but he just doesn't have a very high basketball IQ. You can see kind of glimmers of it at times where he, you know, makes a, not just a good block, but, like, a block that keeps the ball in bounds or plays decent defense, but he's rail thin. He gets pushed around, and he, again, just doesn't know the game very well. So he's going to be a developmental talent for them.
I'm just going to call him Gobert. That's just going to be my thing.
Gobert?
Gobert. Not even Rudy. Just Gobert.
Just Gobert?
Yeah, I like it. Like, Gobert, and it's good stuff. What do we think about Derek Favors? This is a guy who I'm always skeptical of the guys where when they come into the draft, people are like, oh, this guy should go higher than what his production says because his guards sucked. I always hate that. And Favors was one of those guys. And it's made me skeptical.
Last year, he averaged 14.6 points and 11 rebounds per 36 minutes. Shooting 48% from the field. He had a 53% true shooting percentage. PER of 17.5. It's interesting. You think that, like, he improved a lot from, like, last year. But, like, his per 36 numbers were almost strikingly similar.
But those are good per 36 numbers, though. If he plays 36 minutes and puts that up, that's fantastic.
Oh, no, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, the guy should have gotten more playing time than he did. And so that's why I think
they had the two guys blocking him and Cantor.
Yes.
And it still boggles my mind that they didn't get anything for those guys. It just makes no sense to me.
Mm-hmm. I like him. I think he's going to be pretty good. I think this season's going to be very telling because he's the unquestioned starter. So we're going to, you know, get to see if those per 36 numbers, which, like, if what's projected of him will actually come to pass.
Well, all right. What about Enes Kanter? Is it Enes or Enes? I don't know how to pronounce this dude's name. I just call him Kanter.
That's the best way to do it. I did not like him at all coming out of the draft. I thought he was another guy. Like, why would you pick this guy who hasn't played competitive basketball for, I think it was a year, maybe more? I just didn't like him. But, you know, he went out. He really worked on his game. He transformed his body. He looked good last year. He did. He had a few injury problems, I think. But, like, his per 36 numbers last year, 16.9 points and 10.2 rebounds. Shooting, he had a 58% true shooting percentage and 54% effective field goal percentage.
That's a guy who put up a lot better numbers than I thought he looked on the floor.
Exactly. You don't think him to put up those type of numbers. But again, you don't really get to see a full game's worth of him because of that Jefferson Millsap duo that was blocking him. And so, while he looked much better last year, he looked to just be a lot more comfortable in the offense and defense too. He's never going to be a huge shot blocker, that type of defensive guy. He's more a Nikola Pekovic than like a Larry Sanders, which is fine because you have Derek Favors there too. But again, I think it's going to be a very telling year to see if those projected numbers are going to be, they don't have to be his real numbers. He doesn't have to average, you know, 17 and 10, but, you know, if you average like 15 and 9, 15 and 8, like, then you're like, okay, this guy's going to go somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even necessarily think it's about the numbers that he gets. It's more about, you know, the role that he plays. He needs to be a guy that, you know, can get them baskets close to the hoop. They don't necessarily have a guy like that right now.
No,
Favors isn't a great offensive player. He's more of a garbage man. And, you know, I mean, Trey Burke is good off the dribble, and I like Gordon Hayward, but I'm not necessarily sold on, like, an Alec Burks.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy that couldn't get off the bench last year, even as they were throwing out.
But that
I don't even remember who their shooting guards were last year. What's that?
That also may have something to do with just Corbin.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't necessarily sold on him coming into the NBA anyway. But, I mean, the guys that were playing shooting guard for that team last year are not exactly inspiring. And this guy couldn't get off the bench at all, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair enough. And, like, you know, he needs to develop his range. That's going to be the biggest thing for him because, he's decent at attacking the hoop. But, his developing a three-point shot is going to open up a lot more opportunity for him. But he still seems to struggle with that shot. At Summer League, he worked a lot on, like, his one dribble pull-up. Which, like, that's not going to really endear you to the coaches.
Yeah. But I do like what they have in Gordon Hayward there, though. Gordon Hayward's a really nice player. I feel like that's what you say about Gordon Hayward. He's a really nice player.
He's a really nice player. Yeah, Jack had a really good article on him.
So yes, he did.
Listening, go check it out.
President Jack Armstrong Winter wrote about Gordon Hayward. And, I mean, he shot over 40% from three last year. Got himself some free throws.
Looked better handling the ball too, which is huge for him.
Dished the ball out. He upped his assists average a bunch. He still could rebound more for a guy that's, 6'8", 6'9", whatever he is.
I think it's just consistency for him.
Yeah, and he's going to come into a bigger role this year, certainly.
Yes.
So, I mean, but again, really nice player. I like the things he does. He can shoot. He can put it on the floor a little bit. Needs a little bit of work on defense still, like most, guys.
Young guys, yeah.
Yeah. His age, that's what I was looking for. But he should be a really nice player for them. And I think Trey Burke should too. Trey Burke is one of the guys with a good shot to win Rookie of the Year.
The only thing that worries me about Burke is his size, just because, I mean, his wingspan's not that long, and he does struggle against length and against size. He's going to take his bumps, obviously, his rookie year. And I don't think that Summer League was a good indicator of what he's going to be asked to do. Because, with the players around him, he's not going to be asked to score as much or initially to penetrate as much. And he's a very good passer. But I am just a little down on him from where I used to be, again, just because of his struggles against length.
For me, I just love pick and roll point guards that can shoot.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you get a screen and you can knock down that shot behind the screen, it just gives you so much more room to drive if you want to. And he can do both.
Yes.
Even despite his short stature, I think he's 6 feet tall. I've never stood next to him, but if I did, I would be able to.
I'm 6 feet.
So, yeah, I mean, he shot 39% from 38, 39% from three in college last year. And he did well attacking the basket as well.
Oh, yeah,
and
there's no question
that,
about
that. That dribble, I mean, like you said, a dribble pull-up isn't necessarily a great shot, but he's got that in his arsenal coming around the pick on the screen roll. So,
And
he's got good vision, too. And he's got some targets to distribute the ball to with Hayward and Favors and Cantor. I mean, he should be one of the guys that's up there in rookie of the year. Not that that really particularly is a great measure of how good a player is, but he should be up there in Rookie of the Year voting by the end of the season.
Yes, yeah, and I think he will be.
Just in terms of opportunity, he's got...
which is obviously huge for the Rookie of the Year race. I mean, if you put up a lot of points and you're playing, starting every game, you're going to get a lot of...
Yeah, I mean, it's likely that he's going to start most, if not all, of the season at point guard, barring injury.
Exactly.
Let's move on to a team that we think is probably still going to be pretty bad, but maybe not quite as bad as the other teams we've discussed, in my opinion at least, the Kings.
Yes. I love the Mike Malone hire. I like the they got Pete D'Alessandro, right?
Yes.
I think those are two terrific moves. Obviously, the biggest news and the biggest thing in the entire season for the Kings was that they're staying in Sacramento. That was just a hellacious saga that developed and finally ended this year. And so, Kevin Johnson did a terrific job But so now they can get back to focusing on basketball. Not only that, they can focus on basketball with a competent ownership, a competent front office, and a competent coach.
Right. I mean, I can't remember the last time you were able to say this, but I liked every move the Kings made this summer.
Yeah.
I really did. Like every individual move, I liked it. They sold the team. They're staying in Sacramento. I like that. They hired Mike Malone, good hire. They hired Pete D'Alessandro, another good hire. They didn't overpay for Tyreke Evans and swung a trade to get themselves like a real pick-and-roll point guard, Grievous Vasquez. They swung another trade for Mbah Moute, solid wing defender, which they needed badly. They got Carl Landry, who's underrated, you know, can score in the post, grab some rebounds. And they drafted Ben McLemore to be another shooter to go with Marcus Thornton. So, I mean, I really did like everything they did this summer. It's crazy that I'm saying it about the Kings, but I liked it. And
it feels good to say that, right?
Right. I mean, I feel bad for Kings fans, I guess I'd say, just for what they've had to endure over the last few years with the Maloofs and with everybody and with them trying to move the team. I wouldn't necessarily say they're moving quickly in the right direction, but I liked everything they did. And they also drafted Ray McCallum, who's a nice player.
I like that pick a lot. I think he's going to be a solid, at the very least, backup. Yeah, I think McLemore's going to struggle this year.
He's still young, you know. Like,
he's still very
young. If all he does well this year is shoot,
that's fine.
That's fine. Or even if he doesn't shoot well, just get his feet wet, you know?
Yep. And I think they're not counting on him to be a franchise player, which is key for McLemore, because I don't...
Right. I mean, their future kind of hinges on, you know, DeMarcus Cousins getting it.
Which, yikes. It could happen with Malone, maybe.
I mean, all he needs to do is become decent defensively. Like, if he can just stay in position... rather than actively getting himself out of position and not reach so much.
He's also controlling himself. I mean, he needs
to... I don't necessarily... There are plenty of guys who are combustible that are still good players.
I know, I agree with that, but, I mean, Cousins seems to do it so often. Maybe it's just because, you know, we're fixated on him because he's done it often enough. But there's still that... immaturity around there, and also somewhat laziness, again, mostly on defense, where it's, you know, a guy's got to grow up sooner or later.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of his problems can be not most, but a lot of his problems can be traced to just a pure lack of effort.
Yes, yeah.
On both ends.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you get him trying and you get him in a defined scheme on defense, where he knows his responsibilities on every single play are going to be relatively the same in terms of this is what you're going to do on every pick and roll when you're the guy guarding the screener, and this is what you're going to do on every pick and roll when you're the guy guarding the other big man, and this is what you're going to do on side pick and rolls. Just give him defined rules to follow.
Yeah.
And that it should make his life so much easier.
And then on offense also.
Just stop taking 18-footers.
Stop taking 18-footers. Stop taking threes. Like, he's got immense talent, and he can do some things that other guys his size can't do. But that doesn't mean necessarily that he should try and do it all the time.
Right. But I mean, he's got
vertical drives. Not a good idea for him.
With Grievous Vasquez this year, I think they should put him in more pick and rolls, just because he's so athletic and he's catching the ball on the move and either putting it up or making a pass. That's the type of thing where, like you said, Cousins has those kind of skills that not a lot of other bigs have. And yeah. You got to put those to use. Like, he did not use very many pick-and-roll possessions last year. I think they got to get him going more on that.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
And then what else with Sacramento?
They got Patterson. They still have Patterson.
Yeah, they still have Pat.
Or Pat.
I call him Pat. I know Matt likes two Pat, but I'm all about Pat.
Okay, that's fair enough.
And they have Isaiah Thomas still, too. A nice backup point guard. And the Jimmer. You never know. This could be the year for the Jimmer.
I mean, he was...
I was kidding. This is not the year for the Jimmer.
No, and I don't think any year is going to be the year for the Jimmer. I think he'll always be that guy who can score. but he's never going to be a guy who can score consistently. I don't know. It's just, I mean, again, one of the most baffling draft day trades you've ever seen.
What are you going to do?
Right, exactly. But all that's over now. All that's over now.
Yeah, that trade was, good God, that trade was insane. It's crazy how you take on the most salary in the trade and move down in the draft. And the guy you're taking on salary for is John Sammons.
No, they moved up in the draft.
No, they moved down.
I thought they moved up to get him.
No, they moved down in the draft, got Jimmer, and took on John Sammons.
I thought the thing was that they traded up for Jimmer because they were like scared someone was going to take him.
Like 99% sure they moved down from the spot that eventually became Bismack Biyombo.
Let me look this up.
And that just brings us full circle right there with the Bismack Biyombo, by the way.
Right.
I liked when I saw a Bismack Biyombo interview early in his career where I don't know what it was. It was some sort of existential thing, and he was just like, "Who is Bismack?"
Yes, you're right. They drafted Jimmer 10th overall, but it was still just
It was baffling. It was, you know what it was? It was flabbergasting.
It was flabbergasting. It was baffling. It was yes, it was all of those things.
Yes, it was. And you know what? Yeah, we're going to do it. On that note, this has been Podcast Paroxysm. The Jimmer, Bismack Biyombo, terrible teams. We're going to come back, you know, maybe tomorrow, maybe a couple days. We're going to talk about teams that are probably going to be pretty bad.
Yes.
Thanks for listening.